It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, with the impeachment trial coming up again in a couple of hours, political conversations today on Talk of Iowa, since my program, River to River, is again being preempted by live coverage of the impeachment trial. 1 week from today, we will know the winner of the Iowa caucuses. We think maybe undecided will win. My guest for the remainder of the hour, you just heard him laugh, is a Democratic presidential candidate who was a latecomer to the race, Tom Steyer. Steyer is a Goldman Sachs alum and a hedge fund manager. He is campaigning in the state and stopped by our Des Moines studio earlier today. Tom Steyer, welcome to the program.
Ben, thank you so much for having me.
We asked listeners to send in questions for you via social media, and they did before we recorded this interview. We'll try to get to as many of those as we can in the time that we have. Let me ask you about the news of the day. Before we get to some of your policies, I want to ask you about the latest developments in the impeachment trial. Today, the defense is expected to complete its presentation at the trial. They'll continue to argue, it's expected, against calling witnesses who could shed some more light on the president's actions. Yesterday, though, a handful of Republicans, including Senator Mitt Romney, appeared to be moving closer to joining Democrats to voting to subpoena former NSA advisor John Bolton. His upcoming book apparently corroborates a central piece of the case against President Trump. Donald Trump has weathered so many revelations that many predicted he couldn't weather. Do you think this is a storm he will weather as well?
Well, I think it's absolutely critical, Ben, that the administration officials like John Bolton testify in front of the TV under oath so the American people can see what happened. I think it's absolutely critical. I mean, you didn't mention it, but I started the Need to Impeach movement. Over 8.5 million people signed a petition to impeach and remove this president. It started in October of 2017, and those people didn't just sign a petition. They also emailed and called and wrote their congresspeople asking them to hold the president accountable the way every other American citizen is held accountable. Mm-hmm. And so for over 2 years, I've been saying what matters is the American people see, without any editing, what the administration officials testify to under oath so we can make up our minds. That's really the court that counts,
okay.
The court of public opinion. I've been pushing for it for more than 2 years. I think it's absolutely the thing that counts. And so I think we should. There's no question that this trial is a sham and a cover-up unless those administration officials testify.
Should you become the nominee and be elected president, what type of reforms would you push for in order to avoid this sort of constitutional crisis in the future?
Well, actually, Ben, I think the Constitution is working just fine. I think that the question is, are the Republicans going to break their oath to the Constitution? Are they, in fact, going to try and cover up the evidence, bury the facts on a partisan basis, or are they going to do what they're supposed to do, which is be impartial jurors to the behavior of the most corrupt president in American history? And I think it's a very straightforward question. I don't think it's a question of the Constitution failing. I think it's a question about whether the Republican Party decides to do the right thing or decides to try and go along with Mr. Trump and cover up his misdoings.
In addition to your push to impeach President Trump, you are known for your climate activism. You are an activist in your home state of California. You've brought that energy now to this national campaign. Part of your climate platform, Tom, focuses on the idea of justice-centered climate plan. That's the wording. Now, in this plan, you propose $250 billion in new bonds to invest in community-led climate projects across the country. How do you plan to fund, to implement, and to vet this very ambitious project?
Well, let me take a step back, if I could, Ben, because you're talking about being a climate activist. Actually, I've been involved in Iowa, organizing here through Next Gen America, which is a grassroots organization that I started, and we've been here since the beginning of 2014. Next Gen America in 2018 was on 41 campuses across Iowa, and I've been coming here to organize. This is, I think, the seventh year. So in fact, when we look at climate, we view this, as you said, as being a environmental justice-based movement. And and that's what I've done for over a decade in terms of working on climate, is to start in the communities where you can't breathe the air without getting asthma and you can't drink the tap water without getting sick. And those tend to be black and brown communities across the country, although they include a lot of rural Iowan communities.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, we have about a minute before we have to take a break, and then we'll come back to you. How would this be paid for in less than a minute?
Well, bonds are where the government goes out and raises money. So that's exactly how that part of the program is going to be paid for.
And how do we get a consensus in this country? Because we're deeply divided over climate change, aren't we?
Well, what I've said, just so you know, is I would declare a state of emergency on day one as president. I would use the emergency powers of the presidency to start getting going on day one in things like how we generate power, making it clear that this country is going to move to clean energy on a schedule in terms of what kind of cars get built, that we're going to move away from gasoline-driven cars on a schedule over time,
okay,
that we're going to rebuild buildings to make them clean over time.
We'll be back.
And I'm putting in a wealth tax. We're paying for this, don't you? Don't worry, Ben.
Okay,
I have a series of ways to pay this.
We have several minutes yet to talk. We're going to take a short break. Tom Steyer is my guest for this portion of the program. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. And we're back with more of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. For the remainder of the program, I'm continuing a conversation I'm having with hedge fund manager Tom Steyer, of course, Democratic presidential candidate campaigning in Iowa. He stopped by our studio, a conversation from earlier this morning. Tom Steyer, let's talk about health care. Your health care plan supports the creation of a public option that would, in the words from your website, compete aggressively with the insurance companies to drive down costs, expand coverage, and deliver quality health care. Now, you have, as I understand it, have stopped short of supporting Medicare for all. Why do you believe an optional public option is better suited for the nation than a universal public health care system proposed by some of your opponents, Senators Sanders and Warren?
I'll tell you why. Because 160 million Americans get their health care right now through their employment. And what I'm basically saying is to build on the existing system of the Affordable Care Act. I know that people have said on the debate stage that no one likes their employment-based health care, but I can tell you that I've had an awful lot of union workers who've negotiated for their health care through their employment for decades tell me that they love their health care and that they don't want to give it up. And so my point is, okay, let's have a public option as part of the Affordable Care Act. Let's aggressively drive down costs against the drug companies, against the private hospitals, take out the overhead of the insurance companies, and show them that the public option is better so that they go to their employers and say, give us the money you're spending on our health care. We'll buy the public option, and we'll get a raise for doing it. Mm-hmm. But I really believe in choice. I believe that I don't like when people tell me that they know my life better than I do, and if I don't do what they want, I'm going to be breaking the law. And the other thing you got to realize, Ben, is I'm someone who realizes that mental health is health, and that we should spend much more focus and money making sure that the mental health issues across the state of Iowa and across this country are addressed. That is an absolutely under-addressed, under-discussed issue, and it's something that I've seen across this state and across this country for years, going around and doing grassroots organizing.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the area of health care, you've come out in favor of abortion rights and have said you'd like to expand access to reproductive health. Now, Iowa state government, if you've been keeping track of this, has excluded abortion providers from a family planning program for low-income women, leading to the closure of some Planned Parenthood clinics here in the state. State Republicans, they hold a majority in both chambers, also in the governorship, are trying to pass a constitutional amendment that would say the state's constitution does not protect abortion rights. Now, if elected president, how would you make good on supporting access to abortion while still respecting state law?
Well, I think that that state law would actually fly against the Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade. So I don't believe that you can make state laws that go against the federal law in this case. So I think that there has been an attempt by Republicans to pack the courts including the Supreme Court. I think that there was a definite attempt by Mitch McConnell when he was running the Senate to prevent President Obama from getting his justices in, which meant that Mr. Trump has filled up a quarter of the federal bench. And you should know, I'm going to a Planned Parenthood event later today, Ben, that in fact I am committed to choice as part of the series of policies that I support, that I believe support greater equality for women specifically. I think that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, choice is something that I've always been committed to. It's not like I've come out for it. This is something I've been working on for years. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, really, I've spent the last decade putting together coalitions of ordinary American citizens to take on unchecked corporate power. And we've never lost. Let's be clear. I have spent 10 years beating tobacco companies and making them pay their fair share of health costs, beating oil companies about clean energy when they tried to roll them back, fighting to stop the Keystone Pipeline, fighting to stop the last fossil fuel plant that I think will ever be proposed in my home state of California, in Oxnard at Puente. And in fact, I've taken forced utilities across the country to move to 50% clean energy by 2030.
Okay, Tom, we have about just over 10 minutes left. Let me get to some of the questions that were sent in by our listeners. Anne on Facebook would like to ask you, back to the environment question, would you be willing to look at environment costs versus gains of ethanol production? Would you be willing to help Iowa farmers diversify crops and move toward cleaner water? There's a debate over ethanol, whether how environmentally friendly that is, as I'm sure you're aware.
I know. And in fact, I've looked at that in detail, Ben. I believe that there have been, in terms of biofuels and corn-based ethanol in particular, I think there's been a lot of advance. I think when it originally came in, it was unclear whether it was better than as a replacement for gasoline. I think at this point, it's pretty clear that it is better. And so in fact, I am in favor of corn-based ethanol. I also know, you may not know this, but our family has been raising grass-finished cattle, chickens, and pigs for 15 years, partially as a way of understanding scientifically what the impacts are of regenerative agriculture. I know that runoff in Iowa into the water supply is an absolutely critical issue for Iowans, and that's why I say, when I was talking about climate, it's a justice-based thing, because I know that every American has a right to clean air and clean water, and no one gets to poison you and your family so they can make more money. So, and I've also talked to Iowa farmers going around this state for years, and they've talked to me about their ability to stop runoff beyond the regulations to go to ways to keep the water 100% pure. So I know it's doable. I know that it has to happen. And that's part of the plan, to make sure that our climate plan cleans up the air and water as well and creates millions of good-paying union jobs. This is going to be a win-win-win-win-win. We just have to get on it and get going.
Mm-hmm. Alan, also on our Facebook page, asks you, Tom Steyer, what experience do you have that makes you able to handle foreign countries, particularly those who are engaged in warlike endeavors? A question from Alan. So, what do you see also as the biggest foreign policy threat to the U.S. currently?
Well, let me say, I've traveled around the world working, doing business for decades, dealing with corporations, major corporations, and governments. So, in fact, I feel as if I've had extensive experience in terms of how America interacts around the world. What do I think is the biggest issue globally? Look, I know our biggest, most important relationship is with China. And to me, the biggest issue that we're going to face is controlling the climate internationally. Mm-hmm. That, in fact, I understand we're going to have to deal with all of the issues in the Middle East. And I know that that's where the press focuses attention and often where the government focuses its attention. But in fact, we're going to have to lead a coalition of countries around the world to move to clean energy and to stop this climate crisis. So I know that you can't do it in a vacuum, that we're going to be dealing with trade and with the safety of the American people. That has to be paramount. But in terms of a long-run strategy, we're going to have to organize the world, in fact, to move to clean energy, to stop the climate crisis. We're the only country that can do it. And we're going to have to start I declare a state of emergency on day one, because we have to get going. But also, we have to signal to the world what a high priority it is for us.
Tom Steyer, my guest, for about a little less than 10 minutes, Democratic presidential candidate. Another big issue in this campaign, as in recent campaigns, has been immigration. Your immigration plan, Tom Steyer, in it you state you would reform immigration and customs enforcement, ICE, Customs and Border Patrol, and the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, quote, in your words, to reflect our values and culture. What would a reform of these agencies, ICE, look like under a Steyer administration?
We can control our border without terrorizing immigrants. We'd stop breaking international law in the way we treat people who are coming here seeking sanctuary. And we would certainly stop the kinds of cruel and inhumane procedures that Mr. Trump has instituted, like separating children from their parents, like putting people in cages, like trying to make sure that when they come here, they get absolutely no support and are put out on the street, you know, to try and fend for themselves while their claims of needing sanctuary are adjudicated.
Mm-hmm. You've come out, I think, in favor of decriminalizing illegal border crossings. Talk to someone, justify this to someone who has real concerns about how decriminalizing border crossings could impact our national security.
I haven't. As far as I'm concerned, we can control our borders humanely and effectively. This attempt to politicize immigration is really a subterfuge to talk about race and to talk about immigration by non-white people. We have an ability to control our border. This myth that somehow there are people invading the United States is not true. And so the idea that all of a sudden we have to turn this into a gigantic confrontation that escalates into the way we treat people as inhumanely as possible is extremely inept and incompetent, it's also wrong.
Do we have to
can
have a bit,
do this do without you, yeah. going to those extremes or taking that attitude? And we've done that for years.
Do you think, though, we have to have better control of our borders than we currently do?
I think that we have to have different control, actually, Ben.
What does that mean?
I think that what it means is we don't need to build a wall. That's not a solution. We don't need to terrorize people who are coming in here. We don't need to be cruel and inhumane in order to control our borders. We can do this in a way that we treat people decently and control our borders, and also recognize the idea that having people come here to flee, who are fleeing persecution, who are fleeing violence, or who are coming here to work hard and make a better life for themselves and their families, is actually what Americans have been doing for centuries. And it's one of the great strengths of this country that people come here to work hard and to build their life, but at the same time to build the country. And it's a completely different attitude from the idea that there are somehow hordes of people coming here who are not going to bring anything except their problems. That's not true. In fact, what we've seen for centuries is that people come here, work hard, create value for themselves and for the country, and make America stronger. So we can control our border knowing that, in fact, immigrants have built this country, immigrants will continue to build this country, and that we can control that, but it's not something that is an invasion. This is a normal part of America.
About 5 minutes left of the time we have for Tom Steyer, Democratic presidential candidate. Tom Steyer, we've seen several presidential candidates who many say appealed to crucial Democratic base voters, many of whom candidates of color. They've dropped out because of a lack of finances, in part. Why did you feel it was important for you yourself, to get into this crowded race and stay in the race while others have dropped out instead of perhaps backing another candidate who already has an established political constituency?
Because I thought people weren't leveling with the American people, Ben. Because as far as I'm concerned, the issue in the United States is that we have a broken government that's been bought by corporations, and that if we're going to, in fact, get any of the progressive policies that I favor and that everybody else on the Democratic stage favors, we're going to have to break that corporate stranglehold. Mm-hmm. And for 10 years, as an outsider, I've been taking on those corporations and winning, and I thought people were talking about what we wanted, not how we're going to get it, that they weren't talking about how we were going to, in fact, break the corporate stranglehold, the kind of structural change, things like term limits of 12 years for congresspeople and senators that we're going to actually have to change, so that when we talk about healthcare, the drug companies the insurance companies, the private hospitals don't own the government. When we talk about climate change, the oil and gas companies don't get to dictate the fact that we'll never have climate legislation. When we talk about gun violence, prevention of gun violence, that the gun manufacturers don't get to prevent the United States from passing a law that says we're going to have background checks on every gun purchase, that we need to take back our government, and that that is job one. And secondly, that somebody's got to say, we're in a climate emergency. I'm going to make it priority one. I'm going to deal with it from the standpoint of environmental justice and create millions of good-paying union jobs. But we're going to do it on day one. Mm-hmm. I wasn't hearing those things. I think that it's critical that those things be said and that those things happen. And that's why I got into the race, because I felt like, okay, here we go. This is a gigantic issue, and we're going to have to beat Mr. Trump, and we're going to have to beat him on the economy. And, you know, you were saying I have a long history in the private sector. I do. And that means I can take on Mr. Trump on the economy, and I can expose him for what he is. And I think that's different from everybody else in the race. He's a fake.
You know, what do you say to those who think, and we've just got a couple minutes left, that you bypass the political system by jumping into a race, you have no previous experience in public office, and you're privileged because of your wealth. You're about $1.5 billion of your net worth right now, something in that order. What do you say to those who have a problem with that?
I'd say this. Look, I'm an outsider, and I've spent 10 years taking on unchecked corporate power and winning. So if you think the issue is, do we have to take back our government, do you think that the energy for that is going to come from the outside, for somebody who's been fighting these corporations successfully 10 years, or if it's going to come from a career politician inside the Beltway? And I think Mr. Trump is an unconventional politician who did incredibly well against conventional politicians in 2016, including the most prepared Democrat ever. And I feel like if we want change in this system, if we have a broken government, you have to ask yourself, who actually is going to do that? Is it going to be someone from the outside like me, who's successfully beaten these corporations every time for 10 years? Or is it going to be someone from inside the Beltway?
Mm-hmm. I think
that's a really straightforward question for Americans.
We have 1 minute left. How do you view the split in the Democratic Party between the progressive wing that wants structural change, the more moderate centrist part of the party, then in favor of more incremental approach? It sounds like you belong to the more progressive wing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Look, I believe this is a turn-the-page election, that we have to take what the Republicans have done and turn the page on every issue. As far as I'm concerned, they've been wrong. They've been attacking the American people, and we now need to go back to a government that supports the American
Let's say there is a President Steyer. How do you unify the Democratic Party, which has these two different wings? Quickly, we have just 30 seconds.
I believe that they'd all get, in terms of me, yes. I'm a progressive who has worked in the private sector for 30 years. No one's ever going to call me a socialist because I'm not a socialist. But I'm extremely progressive, I think, on some issues. I'm the most progressive person. I'm the person who's talking about reparations for black people.
Okay.
I'm the person coming at me about my immigration policy. I'm someone who understands that we have to be fair to immigrants of color, that we have to be fair to Latinos. We have to stand up for their rights and do the right thing, because that's what actually being an American is all about.
Tom Steyer, we've run out of time. And thank you for coming into our Des Moines studio. We appreciate it. Democratic presidential candidate Tom Steyer. Thanks.
Thanks, Ben.
And that's it for today. Talk of Iowa is produced by Caitlin Harrop, Rick Brewer, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.